Our next speaker is Andrew Spears from the University of Southampton, who will talk about second order Tucholsky in short show.
Hi, so I'm Andrew Spires, and I'm going to be talking about calculating the second order Tucholsky source in Schwarzschild, and this is work I've done with many collaborators. So to begin, I'm going to review my talk from last year on second order self-force and Kerr and the reduced second order Tucholsky equation. Then I'm going to outline the group effort to calculating the second order, to solving the second order Tucholsky equation. And then I'm going to discuss our progress in calculating the source, and then how we expect to improve the regularity of the source near future null infinity by transforming to the Bondi-Sachs gauge. Okay, so we've seen some interesting talks about second order in Schwarzschild, but now for the motivation of my work, I want to concentrate on the fact that astrophysical supermassive black holes are expected to have spin. So we need the formalism to be rooted in Kerr. So our goal is to calculate the dissipative piece of the second order self-force in order to calculate first post-adiabatic waveforms. So crucially, in Kerr, the linearized Einstein field equations are non-separable. So the techniques in the previous talks become very difficult in Kerr because they relied on separability of the linearized Einstein equation in Schwarzschild in the Lorentz gauge. So we want to look for some separable equations. To do that, we can return to first order. So in Kerr, it's generally been used to solve the Tucholsky equation, which is a separable equation. So I've written the Tucholsky equation here as a partial differential operator O, which is separable, acting on psi 4 1, where psi 4 is the fourth bar scalar. If you're unfamiliar, psi 4 1 contains information about the gravitational waves at first order. So this equation is sourced on the right hand side by a linear operator S acting on the first order perturbation to the stress energy tensor. So at second order, it turns out we have two options for Tucholsky equations. One was written about 20 years ago by Campanelli and Lusto. So this equation, O is acting on the second order perturbation to psi 4. And it has two source terms. I want to talk about the source SCL, which is a quadratic operator acting on the first order perturbation to the stress energy tensor and the first order metric perturbation. Now these two quantities are singular on the world line. So as SCL is a quadratic operator acting on singular quantities, it is not in general well-defined as a distribution, making solving this equation in the gravitational self-force problem very difficult. So this motivated us to try and find a Tucholsky equation which did have a well-defined source in the self-force problem. This led us to what we call the reduced second-order Tucholsky equation, where O is now acting on Psi4L2, where Psi4L2 is the linear in H2 piece of Psi4L2. And on the right-hand side, we see the source now is contained within this linear operator S. So these two pieces here, the second order perturbation to the stress energy tensor and the quadratic Einstein equation, which is a quadratic operator. However, it's been shown that in a highly regular gauge, that these two quantities are well defined as distributions. And my colleague Sam Upton will talk about this later. So as these are well defined distributions and they're acted on by a linear operator, this source is well defined as a distribution, so we can solve for Psi4L2. Okay, now I want to talk about the track towards the dissipative piece of the second order self force using Psi4L2. So there's two options. You could do second order Green-Holland-Zimmermann metric reconstruction, which calculating psi for L2 would be the first step. Or if some people are trying to formulate second order balance laws for the energy, angular momentum, and Cotes constant. So and a way of calculating the change in these quantities from psi for L2, which seems plausible, but it's a work in progress. And this would produce a more direct route to the dissipative piece of the second order cell force. So you can think of these people as roughly the number of radial integrations you'll have to do for each method. Alternatively, you could think of them, each person, as a PhD student. Okay, next up, I want to talk about how we calculate the source to our reduced second order Tikorsky equation, SD2G. So I've written S here in GHP formalism, which if you're unfamiliar with, all you need to worry about is these funny letters F and Thorn are first order partial differentials operators. So S is quite compact. You can write it on two lines. However, D2G is a lot less compact. I've written it in a sort of a more compact form here by having the covariant derivatives contracted with the tetrad vectors N. So basically, all you need to know is if I was to write this in GHP form, it takes about an A4 paper in LaTeX. So as you can imagine, S acting on D2G is very large and contains about 1,600 terms. And this is just in Schwarzschild using a Carter tetrad. So once I calculated SD2G, I then calculated its form in Boyer-Lindquist coordinates. So we can hopefully integrate it. So as said in previous talks, this is part of a group effort for calculating sources. There's many other ingredients. What I'm talking about here is the SD2G piece. And I also want to talk about how we plan to improve the behavior of this piece of the source by transforming to the Bondi-Sachs gauge. So to do that, I'm going to show you some preliminary results for SD2G. I should note that these aren't quite correct. I'm pretty confident that my expression in Mathematica is correct, as it's passed a load of tests. However, transferring that expression to C++ seems to have introduced an error, which is causing it to diverge near the horizon. It should actually be going to zero. But the behavior I want to talk about, and the behavior which is working as expected, is this divergence near future null infinity, which is proportional to r to the 4. And this means if you try to integrate the equation, it's not going to converge in this state. So now I want to talk about how you can improve this divergence by two orders in r to r squared by transforming to the Bondi-Sachs gauge. This is still not good enough for convergence, so we will also have to include a puncture. So this brings me back to this diagram I talked about last year, where gamma is the world line of the inspiring object. And we want to choose good gauges for our calculation to make it as smooth as possible. So I talked about the highly regular gauge near the world line. We want a horizon regular gauge near the horizon of the supermassive black hole, and importantly, you want an asymptotically flat gauge near future null infinity. So currently, we use the Lorentz gauge's input, which is asymptotically flat at first order, but at second order introduces some non-asymptotically flat behavior, which we need to gauge away to regularize the source. So to transform to the Bondi-Sachs gauge, we can use the fact that while psi for L2 is not gauge invariant, it only depends on the first order gauge vector. So this means that we can solve the gauge transformation equation for any input H1. So we solve for Z1, the gauge vector, by putting the condition that H prime is in the Bondi-Sachs gauge. Now we've showed this reduces to solving a couple hierarchical ODEs, which are first order ODEs integrated along the radial direction, so they're quite straightforward to solve for. And we've also shown that by implementing boundary conditions, we can fully fix the BMS freedom of the system, which I talked about briefly yesterday. So just to show you that this this method is simpler than the current method computed at second order for the previous calculations. I think Adam briefly mentioned that calculating the boundary conditions is a very complex calculation. I've heard it's many tens of pages. Well, this method makes it a lot more straightforward. And for the L equals naught piece, we in fact only have dependence on slow time at the current time the particle is at, so that i.e. there's no slow time integrals involved in these equations for the gauge vector, which is very pleasing to see. Okay, so now I just want to give a summary that I've talked about how I'm calculating the source to the Sikorsky equation in Schwarzschild, and that I plan to regularize the source in a future non-infinity by transforming to the Bondi-Sachs gauge. And once this is correct and regular, we will pass it over to Ben Lever, who will integrate the Sikorsky equation for psi 4 L2. Now, importantly, we're also looking forward to Kerr, because we want to solve this reduced second order Sikorsky equation in Kerr. However, to do that, we need a smooth first order metric perturbation. And techniques for calculating a smooth first order metric perturbation will be discussed in the talks by Tumani, Zimmerman, and Green later today, which are sure to be very interesting. So look out for those. And thank you very much for listening. And please feel free to ask questions.
Yes, thank you, Andrew. Very nice talk. We have a few minutes for questions. First, I think it was Matijas, whose hand was up. Please.
There's some really interesting results. So I had questions regarding the fact that you mentioned that they transform to radial ODEs. So could you give us a sense of, in terms of complexity, how do these ODEs correlate to the first order ODEs of the Tikhonovsky equation, the radial and angular? I mean, how complex are they comparing to them?
So for the Tikhonovsky equation, it's a second order ODE. So you've got two radial derivatives in the operator O, whereas the equation for Z are just first order ODEs. But there's two ODEs, first order ODEs, which you have to solve.
Right. So just a small follow-up. So is there any coupling between these ODEs? For example, the first order ODEs have coupling between them. Are they coupled?
No, you can separate it so that they're hierarchical. So you solve the first one and then you use that input in the second one. Nice. So it's nice and straightforward.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any more questions?
Hector had hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew, for the talk. So I've been doing something quite similar to you, but using the Reggie-Wheeler gauge or Reggie-Wheeler equation instead. I found that I have some sort of similar behavior to what Adam had for the static modes. I found some sort of divergent integrals. I was just curious if the Bondi-Sachs gauge would sort of bypass some of the issues that Adam may have had in the Lorentz gauge.
So I think it does bypass a lot of the issues because you only need to calculate the first order. You only need to fix the first order gauge. so you don't have to do the second order. And then I think for the for this example where I'm transforming from the Lorentz gauge, the Lorentz gauge is already quite similar to the Bondi-Sachs gauge, which is why we're seeing such easy, such an easy, simple transform for the L equals naught modes. And I think that might also carry on to the stationary modes, but not the non-stationary modes. I think I'll have to check that.
I see. Thank you.
Sure.